Now we're holding on page 62 in Sanhedrin, Ois Ayin.
42?
62 in Sanhedrin, Ois Ayin. We learned last time about the about when Achav died. The pasuk said when he died in battle, he was mortally injured in battle. And the pasuk says Vayava harina b'machna. There was a rina that circulated throughout the whole camp. And the Gemara explains this as a rina of avoid reshoim rina, that they were happy that the Rosh Achav was gone. So now the Gemara is going to go into discussing a little more about what happened over there. So a little bit of background, we talked about the other day. Achav was going to battle against Aram, whose king was Ben-Hadad. He has Yehoshaphat as his, he's allied together with Yehoshaphat. They're going to go with their armies together. Yehoshaphat is the king of Yehuda. He was a tzaddik. Achav was a rosha, but they agreed to go together. Achav tells Yehoshaphat there's a particular city in Eretz Yisrael, Ramos Gilad. It belongs to us. The Aramim are occupying it illegally, so we have to go fight them to get it back. And Yehoshaphat agrees to go with him. Later on, by the way, when he gets back from the battle, Yehoshaphat himself was almost killed in the battle as well. He was saved only at the last moments. Afterwards, when he gets back home, in Divrei Hayomim, it says that a Navi came to him and told him, you know, that's not right. You're not supposed to join together with a Rosha. And you would have been killed if it weren't for the fact that you're a tzaddik and Hashem appreciates your ma'is and tovim. Anyway. So what happened was, so now the pasuk describes there were a couple of 400 Nevi'im showed up, and they're all saying that Achav will be successful in battle. Yehoshaphat realizes there's something wrong. We'll learn later on in the Masechta what he realizes wrong. True Nevi'im never say the same thing, and here all 400 of them are saying the same thing. So some of them first explain that maybe they were Nevi'i Habal or something, partial Nevi'im of Avodah Zarah. Now the Gemara later on seems to say that they were in fact true Nevi'im, but this time they were being misled with a false Nivua. Whatever the case, Yehoshaphat smells a rat. He says, we need a true Navi over here. So they go call a Navi named Michoyu. Michoyu says that, he says in Nivua that Achav is going to be killed in battle. So Achav is very angry at that. He orders Michoyu thrown in jail, and he goes off to battle. Michoyu's Nivua had actually included the point that only Achav is going to be killed in battle. No other Yid is going to lose his life. In fact, the Medrash says on it actually what happened was in the course of that whole story, one of the false Nevi'im named Sifti ben Knana went over and slapped Michoyu on the cheek and claimed, you're a false Navi and I'm the true one. So because of that, we learned yesterday about the Yisurim of a Tzaddik being a Kapara for the Jewish people, so therefore that Yisurim of Michoyu was Mechaper for the rest of the Jewish people, that none of them had to be killed in that battle, only Achav. In addition, also, there's a well-known medrash that says that in Achav's times, the people had tremendous avas Yisrael for one another, so therefore they were successful in their battles, even though they were Oiv Gavra Dezara, as opposed to the medrash says, in David's times, they were great, they were on a very high level, they were serving Hashem and doing mitzvahs tremendously, but there were Bali Lashon Hara among them, and therefore some of them fell in battle, showing how much Hashem appreciates Achtos among the Jewish people, even when in that Achtos they're doing Averis. Anyway. One particular detail, which is the reason I'm giving all this background, actually, first of all, so we understand the story, but also because details of it are going to come up in the Gemara over here. In Michoyu's Nevuah, Michoyu's Nevuah is going to be that Achav is going to be killed in battle over there. The battle is going to take place in Ramos Gilad in Eivra Yaudin. So Achav goes to war, and sure enough, one of the Arami soldiers shoots an arrow and wounds him, and he dies eventually of his injuries. Now, the problem was, or the difficulty was, that previously you had like this. There was a story of Navos. Navos has a vineyard near Achav's palace in Israel. Achav wants the place to turn it into a vegetable garden and a place of Avodah Zarah. Navos refuses to sell it to him. So Achav arranges for them to frame Navos on false charges and have him executed, and then he can take over the place. So Hashem sends Eliyahu with a very harsh nevuah to Achav that says, Among other things, in the same place here in Israel where the dogs licked up Novice's blood, in the same place they will lick up your blood when you die. Now, so the question is, how are these two Nevuahs going to be reconciled? Michoyu would say, so Eliyahu was saying he's going to be killed, his blood is going to be in Israel, which is on the western side of the Yarden, in the territory of Shevet Yisachar. Michoyu was saying he's going to be killed in battle in Ramos Gilad, which is in Eivra Yarden, in the territory of God or whichever. So how are these two things going to work? So Now, like this, when Ahab died, so the pasuk describes the chariot was full of blood. The pasuk actually describes Ahab did one brave thing over there. He even though he was wounded, he tells his driver to start turning around. That needs to be taken to be treated. But he stood. He stayed standing in the chariot the whole time, so nobody would realize he's wounded, because he knew that if they know that, then everybody's going to panic, and then there's going to be tremendous casualties among the Jews. So he held him, he pulled himself together and stayed standing over there. But so therefore, by the end, the chariot was full of blood. So now the pasuk describes that they took it to Shomron and washed it in the pool over there. And the pasuk says v'hazonos rochotzu v'gomer. The pasuk says and the zonos what or bathed. So what does that mean? The pasuk chat and the Foshim explain it means, in other words, you know, it's the public pool over there in Shomron. So it means the local zonos, when they bathed in the water over there, as they would sometimes do. So now they're bathing in a mixture of that has Achav's blood in it as well, because there was so much blood that came out of the chariot as they're washing it. But the Gemara gives a couple of other explanations. Amar Rav Elazar, the word hazoinus is like the word chesyonus, because we often know that a hey and a ches can be interchanged in drushes. Many such examples of that, because after all, hey and ches look similar in the proper pronunciation of Lashon Kodesh. They sound similar, and hey. So therefore, so the Gemara often interchanges one with the other. So Rabbi Elazar explains that v'chazoinus, we read it as if it was v'chazoinus. So the marek shtei chazoinus, so that rochotsu means to cleanse, to wash. So it means that this cleansed and clarified two chazoinus, two nevuas. Achas shom Michoihu v'achas shel Eliyahu. One of Michoihu who said that Achav is going to die in battle, and one of Eliyahu who said that the dog is going to lick up his blood in Israel. It says, so now when the Tzidki of Knana confronts him and slaps him in the face and says, you don't know what you're talking about, I'm the true Navi and you're a false one. So Michoihu says, Im Shoiv Toshu V'Shalom, he says, if you return back here in peace, Lo Dibur Hashem Bi, then Hashem has not spoken through me. In other words, right now, fine, you're claiming that I'm a false Navi. We'll know the truth, Achav, you're not coming back alive. But the point is, he had said, again, that Achav is going to die there in Ramos Gilad. Vel Yohu Ksiv, meanwhile, Yohu had said in Nevor, Vim Koimash Alokuku Aklov Mazdam Novis, in the place where the dogs licked up Novis's blood. So the question is, how are these two things going to be reconciled? So now we understand what happened. Is he didn't come the base of the Shalom. He was wounded over there in the battle and died. So he didn't come back home to Shomron or to Yisrael in peace. And then when they washed out the blood, so the water flowed in fact from Shomron to Yisrael, and sure enough the dogs licked it up over there. So therefore, both nevuos came true, even though nobody had any way of understanding before that how they could possibly both be true. In fact, actually, it's interesting when Josephus tells over this story in his histories, he actually says flat out that there were people who, so not just the Tzidki of Knana, but there were other people over there who thought also Michoihu was a false Navi for one thing, because his nevuos seems to contradict Eliyahu's. But now, when it actually came true, then everybody realized how both things in fact happened. So that's v'hazonus rochotsu. They cleansed and clarified both chazonus, both nevuos. Rava Amar, Rava says, no, zonus mamish. It means actual zonus, but not actual live zonus, but Achav ishmit sunan haya. What happened was, Achav was a very cold, frigid kind of person. He was not very much into tashmish. So Izevel made two pictures of Zonus in his chariot so that he should see them and be aroused. So therefore now when they washed out the chariot, then they washed off those pictures of the Zonus as well, and that's why Zonus Rechatsu. According to that way of looking at it, why do we need to know that? Why is it important to know that detail about the decorations in Achav's chariot? So an interesting point that's made in that regard. The Gemara tells us later in the Masechta that really, how did the Jewish people get into Avodah Zarah in the first place? I mean, we're talking the Jewish people who saw Hashem by Har Sinai and experienced all the Nisim and all. How did they ever get into Avodah Zarah in the first place? So the Gemara explains they did it lahata lahen arayas v'fahesia. They wanted to have an excuse to be able to do arayas, and they knew if we follow the Torah, Hashem has strict rules about that, whereas the Geshkes don't care one way or the other. They're not into the various gods of the nations are not into morality. So therefore, if we worship them, then that'll give us the excuse to do whatever they want, whatever we want. Well, now, if Achav is an Ishmit Sunan, if he has not much of a taiva for Tashmish, then he has even much less of an excuse than anybody else to be into Avodah Zarah. So therefore, it highlights how bad his Averis were that he got into Avodah Zarah without even having the excuse that he wants it Lahat Lahem Arayis for Fahesia. Onward.
Arayis for Fahesia, the difference in Fahesia.
Well, in other words, people might do Arayis in private and nobody knows about it, but to do Fahesia, to officially say, we can do this and there's no problem with it. So the Goyish nations had no problem with that kind of thing. Their gods didn't care about the way they depicted their gods. As long as you bring them as sacrifices and do whatever for them, then they don't care what you do in your personal life. See? Okay. Here's another pasuk from that story, which the Gemara darshins in two different ways. The pasuk, how did Ahav die? Again, he was shot by an arrow. The pasuk says, "Ish moshach bakeshes l'sumai." A man drew his bow l'sumai, and then vayaka, and he struck Ahav. Meanwhile, the psukim say over there that the king of Aram had ordered his soldiers not to shoot at anybody, just to try to go for Ahav. The pasuk mentions they saw Yehoshaphat, they thought he was Ahav for a minute, and they were about to attack him, and then Yehoshaphat cried out. He cried out to his soldiers to help him, he cried out to Hashem to help him, and they realized he's Yehoshaphat and left them alone, and the next thing is that the soldier draws his bow and then quote-unquote happens to shoot Ahav. By the way, that soldier, later on, we have in Melachim Beis, Naaman, the great general of Aram, who had Saras, that was him. That's a Kibay Nasan Hashem Chual Aram. Rashi brings on the Pasuk over there that he was the one who had killed Ahav with his arrow, so that's how he got promoted to be general. Anyway, so what's this Lesumai? So Rabbi Elazar Omer L'Fisumai. So Rabbi Elazar says it means exactly that, L'Sumai. He didn't particularly plan to hit Ahav or to hit anybody. He was drawing his bow and shooting almost at random, and he didn't chapsich what he's doing. So actually, the Rif over here points out there was a certain degree of tmimus in Ahav himself. As much as Ahav was a Rasha, after the whole affair with Navos, when Eliyahu comes and tells him, because of this, your whole family is going to be wiped out, and you yourself, the blood, your dogs will lick up your blood, and he's evil, the dogs will eat her, v'chola, v'chola. So Eliyahu tells him a very harsh nevua, and then the pasuk says that Ahav at that point did tshuva. It wasn't a perfect tshuva, but he did a certain degree of tshuva. And Hashem tells Eliyahu, because Ahav did tshuva, therefore I'm commuting his punishment. The destruction of his household will take place in the times of his son, not in his own time.
But Eliyahu needed to escape.
That was earlier. When Eliyahu escaped was after the whole thing with the Nevi'ah Baal on Har HaKarmel.
Okay.
That was the story with the Nevi'ah Baal is in Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Ches. Eliyahu escapes in Perek Yud Ches and goes to Har Sinai, and you have the whole Gilu Shchina that he has over there. This story is in Melachim Aleph Perek Chaf Aleph. So anyway, so Ahav at that point did Shuvah. The pasuk says he put on sackcloth. He was fasting. There's a Yerushalmi, I think, that says that he had Yehoshaphat come every day and give him malchus. So he was doing a degree of tshuva. It wasn't a complete tshuva, but it was something. It was enough to have his punishment commuted. So now the Rif says that when there's a nevuah that he's going to be killed in battle, it could have been a very degrading kind of death. It could have been, for example, that one of them pulls out his sword and chops off Ahav's head or something. The fact that he had kind of a more dignified death by arrow is as a result of, because he showed that tmimus in doing tshuva, in doing that partial tshuva, at least, therefore Hashem paid him back with sumoi, that this guy did also, he shot his arrow with sumoi, not knowing what he's aiming at, and ended up hitting Ahav. So that's one explanation. Rava Omar, Rava says no. L'sumoi over here means l'samim shtei chazyonis. Again, it's in order to make perfect the two nevuos, achas from Michoyu, v'achas shel Eliyahu, the one of Michoyu and the one of Eliyahu, where again they seem to contradict each other. What's going to happen with Ahav? And now, when this guy shot his arrow, then that began the chain of events that caused both things to happen. Where he was killed in Ramos Gilad, as Michoyu had said, but his blood ended up being in Yisrael, and the dogs licking it up over there, as Eliyahu had said. Talking about Ahav now, let's talk about another story involving him. And here we're going to focus mostly on Avadia. In Perek Yud Ches, before the whole story of the Nevi'ah Baal of Eliyahu and the Nevi'ah Baal on Har HaKarmel, so the pasuk describes there was a terrible famine in Eretz Yisrael for 3 years. Eliyahu has disappeared. So now Ahav and Avadia, who was Asher al Abayis, he was in charge of the palace, so he's like Ahav's chief of staff. So the pasuk describes Achav called for Ovad Yehu, who was in charge of the house. And Ovad Yehu was feared Hashem very greatly. And the pasuk goes on to describe how when Izebel was killing all of the Nevi'im that she could get her hands on, then Ovadia hid a bunch of them in caves, as we're going to talk about soon. Now, so like this, in other words, the flow of the pasukim is Achav calls for Ovad Yehu. And Evadia was a Yorei Shemayim, very Yorei Shemayim, and the pasuk goes on to say what he did for the Nevi'im. Then it continues and says, Achav tells Evadia, you and I split up and we'll go in different directions and see if we can find any grass to keep the horses alive at least. And then the pasuk describes as Evadia is going along, he meets up with Eliyahu, and Eliyahu tells him, go tell Achav that I want to see him, and we're going to have the whole showdown in Harakamo. Now, the point of the Gemara is bothered by why the pasukim arranged that way. Achav calls for Ovad Yehu, and then it spends a couple of psukim interjecting what Ovadia did, and then it resumes the story. Why not? It should first introduce Ovadia, say what he did, and then say, Achav called for Ovadia and told him, let's go look for grass. So, the Gemara understands that there's something else going on over here. So my omale or my ka'omakra. So what did he tell him? So my omale would be what did he tell him that it says vayikra achav elavad yohu, and he only a few psukim later doesn't say what he told him, implying that there's something else in between that he told him. Or my ka'omakra. What is the pasuk saying? Why is it phrasing that way? What is the fact that evadia hoyoyore as a shemoid? How does that come in over here when Achav is calling for him and telling him let's go look for grass? So Marsha says it can mean both things. In other words, the Gilsa in the printed Gemara is my Ka'amakra, what is the Pasuk saying? But Marsha says, fine, the Pasuk is saying, look, we're introducing Evadia for the first time. When you talk about a tzaddik, you mention a praise of him, like we find by Noach. Ela Tolos Noach, Noach is tzaddik. By Avram, we find other examples like that. But the question is, we always, whenever it says that Pliny called Pliny, right away it says afterwards what he said. And only a couple of psukim later does it say what he says. So therefore, the Gemara is understanding that there was something else he told him in between. So therefore, we understand that is actually an answer to an unwritten question of Achav. So, it means that Achav says to Evadia like this. By Yaakov, it says that Lavan says to him, Nichashti, I've done my nichush, my divination, whatever. And I realize that Hashem has blessed me because of you. I have a lot more flocks. As it actually points out over there, till now I had only daughters and now I have sons, etc. So I realize it's all because of you. Or Yosef, by Baruch Hashem, it's based on Mitzvah, the Glav Yosef. By Yosef and Potiphar's house, also Hashem blessed the house of the Mitzvah because of Yosef. Now, says Achav to Evadia, Ubeisidau hu gavra, loikahava mivrich, but the house of that person, meaning my house, is not blessed. Shema lo yorei elikim hu, or after, maybe not, maybe you, maybe it's your fault, you're not a yorei elikim, and therefore you're not bringing bracha to my house. Yotzis bas kova amra, so you know, Russia understands that you need a tzaddik to bring bracha into the house, yeah. Yotzas Baskol v'omra, so a Baskol rang out and said, so now when the Pasuk says, Evad Yohu, Yorei Es Hashem, this is not just the Pasuk narrating we should know who Evadia was. This is a Baskol at that point in answer to that challenge of Achav's, Evad Yohu, Yorei Es Hashem Oid. What about Achav's challenge? Upeisa shal Achav, enim azumun lebracha. Achav's house is not suitable for bracha, and therefore as great a tzaddik and a Yorei Shemayim as Evadia is, he's not bringing bracha into the house. A couple of interesting details in that. First of all, Achav was, in fact, okay, there was a famine going on at that time, but still, Achav had, later on in Malachim days, it says he had 70 sons, so even though he was an Ishmael son, and apparently he still managed to, whatever, maybe the 70 sons means grandsons also, but whatever, the point is, he had quite a few descendants. He was very rich. The Pasuk talks about a palace made of ivory that he built for himself. They actually found fragments of ivory pieces like that in diggings, in archaeological digs in Shomron, and some of them seem to be from that palace of Achav's. We find them in various things that show that he was. We find also there's Gemara elsewhere that mentions that many of the that he was Moshe of the Kippah. He had at least a certain degree of dominion over all the kings in the known world. So what do you mean? Dahu Gavra Loikam Mivrich. So there's a couple of explanations. Ben Yehoyada says, What he means is, but his astrologers told him that all these 70 sons of his are all going to die in one day, which eventually happened some years later when Yehu mounted a rebellion and took over the kingship and had all of Ahab's family executed. And all his wealth is going to disappear in one day also, so he figures then, as much as I have bracha now, I realize from my astrologers telling me it's not going to last. So why is that? Then there's also a point that he's saying that another point one of the Mephoshim says, he's arguing, okay, I have bracha as far as riches and all, but how come my wife Izebel is such a rishas? How come she hasn't improved as a result of you? And the answer is because einim mezumen lebracha. So Taka, what's the difference? One difference is because a difference that's pointed out is that Lavan and Potiphar both had descendants who were tzaddikim. Lavan, his daughters were the imahos. Potiphar, his daughter or stepdaughter, okay, whatever, was Osnas, Yosef's wife, as opposed to all of Ahav's descendants were destroyed, and in fact, all of them ended up getting destroyed. So therefore, yeah, enim ezumen lebracha. Okay, so the Gemara continues, Amar Rava, or Rav Abba, Godol shenema ba'evadia, Yosef ma shenema ba'avram avinu. What it says about Evadia in this context is even greater than what it says about Avram avinu. Now, what does that mean? Is Evadia greater than Avraham? We'll explain that in a second. The Ilav Avram like Siv Ma'oid. By Avraham, Hashem tells him, by the Akedah, Ki Yirei Alekim Ata. It doesn't say Ma'oid. But Uvayvadyahu Siv Ma'oid. But here it says, Vayvadyahu Hayo Yoreh Hashem Ma'oid. So therefore, so it's said greater than him as far as the point about the descendants, that's actually Marashah says that over here, that as much as Lavan and Potiphar were Rishoyim, they had descendants who were tzaddikim as opposed to Ahav. They also mention Hashem's name, yeah, because they weren't completely denying Hashem. They were worshiping Hashem together with Avodah Zarah. This is why Eliyahu tells them, why you're halting between two opinions and you can't make up your mind yet. So what does it mean? How could it be that it says something greater about Evadia than it does by Avraham? So now, Marsha points out, Avraham's Milo was Ahava. Zera Avraham Oyhavi, the Pasuk says on him, that he's Avraham who loved me. And he had the Milo of Ahava, which is even greater than Yira. But on the other hand, when it comes to what we're saying is, when it comes to Yira over here, when Hashem tells Avraham, Ki Yirei Elokim Ata, he's saying it to his face. Now we know you're only saying mitzvah shracha shaladim b'fano. So therefore, it can't say ma'oid about him. But here, it's the pasuk narrating. Fine, he said there was a baskel that came out and stuck up for Evadia, but not maybe that baskel didn't say the word ma'oid, or at any rate, the baskel maybe is addressed to Ahav, not to Evadia. Not Evadia is not necessarily hearing it. So therefore, it can say ma'oid. So that's one point about it. On the side over here, there's a pirush called Ene Yitzchak. That gives an explanation about it. The gist of it is that Avraham, of course, was a Yoreh Shamayim, but he didn't have to, in a way, he didn't have to work so much on it because he wasn't living among the Shoyim. He himself, I mean, early on, of course, he was, but afterwards, the Gemara says he had his own yeshiva, he was living independently, he didn't have to worry so much about the Rishoyim among whom he lives that they might influence him. So he didn't have to work on Yiras Shamayim as much, he could focus more on Ava, which after all is a greater level. As opposed to Evadia was saying is living among Rishoyim, among Ahav, among Izebel, so he has to work really hard on being a Yoreh Shamayim and constantly remind himself that there's punishment from the Eibishter for person does an Avera, and therefore, so therefore, he became Yoreh Hashem Ma'od because he had to, otherwise he'd end up falling in. And then he goes on to say, the next question in the Gemara is, the Gemara is going to ask, how is he Zoicha to Nevius? So the Ene Yitzchak says that goes together with it. If he's always being afraid of punishment, that means he's not able to be so besimcha, and a person has to be besimcha to have nevuah. So how is he zoicha to nevuah? And that's going to be the Gemara's next question. Okay. So from Nemaz zocho Evadiyahu nevuah. Why was Evadia zoicha to nevuah? So again, what's the problem? Why shouldn't he be Zoicha to Nevius? Rashi, so first of all, we just had the Ene Yitzchak's explanation, but then there are a number of others. Rashi says because he was a ger. The Gemara is going to explain soon that he was a ger from Eden. The Shechina rests only on Miuchosin, Shabi Yisrael. So a ger doesn't have that kind of Miuchos. How was he Zoicha to Nevuah? Mind you, actually, the Kuzari actually says, Take, he says that when we say this rule, that the Shechina rests only on Miuchosin, he says it's an absolute rule. There's no exceptions. So according to him, he would have to understand that when the Gemara there said, later on says, that Evadia was a ger from Eden, the Kuzari would have to understand that that's not universally accepted by the Chachamim.
Kuzur himself, they were gay,
no? Yeah, well, the king of Kuzur himself was a gay, right? But the Kuzari is there is a back and forth between a chacham named Rabbi Yitzchak HaSangari and the king of Kuzur. Yeah, it was written a few hundred years later by Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. So in the course of the discussion, at one point when they're talking about Nevuah, then the chacham makes the point that Nevuah is only on Miuchosim Shabbi Yisrael. So the Kuzari would have to understand that when the Gemara says student that Evadia was a ger, is not all the chachamim would agree to that. In any case, so that's one point, is because he was a ger.
Was he a
Kim Zarach HaKarecha? Rashi brings fine, but Zarach HaKarecha primarily means Avraham's descendants through Yitzchak and then through Yaakov. Kibi Yitzchak Yikarav Chazara, and the Yitzchak, will I call Yitzchak? The Gemara explains elsewhere that it means that only within Yitzchak himself, only Yaakov and his descendants are considered the true Zera of Avraham. So if Evadia is from Eder, then he's not from Zera Avraham, even if he's biologically descended from Avraham. Marshall says, okay, maybe the Chacham had the Kabbalah that he was a Ger from Eder, and so therefore the question, how could he be a Navi? Another point that a couple of Mephoshim make is that we see the later on, after he passed away, you have the story with his widow coming to Elisha and saying, what are we going to do? We're very poor. The Isha Achas Min Shem Benan of him Tzaka al Elisha. We have his Aftarah of Parshas Vayera. So he's still called Bnei HaNeviim at that point, implying he didn't start out. Now, the Neviim, how would a person train to be a Navi? They would go to the yeshivas of the Neviim. They were the Talmudim. They were called Bnei HaNeviim. And they would work and they would train to become Neviim. Evadia was either apparently at a very early stage of that, the fact that he's still called Bnei HaNeviim, and so he was a very early stage. Mestam also, I mean, if he's a ger, he only started it later in life. So the question is, how is he Zoichat to Nevuah when he didn't go through that rigorous training that a regular Navi does? Yaakov also points out a Navi is supposed to be rich, and here we see that Evadia was poor to that very story, that we see that his widow was so desperate for money that he himself had to borrow at Ribbis, and now she's in trouble, etc. Okay, so how is he Zoichat to Nevuah? And the reason is because he hid 100 Nevi'im in caves when Ezebel was trying to kill him. So it's like Midah Keneged Midah. He hid the Nevi'im, and therefore for that he was Zoichat to Nevuah himself.
That's why maybe he's so poor, because he's
So that's the point. That's the point, actually. So that's the point. The Gemara, the Pasuk says that he supplied them with food the whole time they were. That's exactly it. Medrash says, it actually brings it on the Pesukim there, that he used up all his fortune feeding those Nevi'im during all that time. Later on, he had to go borrow money, and he couldn't find. The only person who was willing to lend him money was Yehoram, the king of the son of Achav, but he would only lend him at Ribbis. So Avadia had no choice, it's Pekuach Nefesh for the Nevi'im, but that was why later on, after he passed away, that his widow comes to Elisha and says, now what are we going to do? Vanosha Bolakachas, the creditor, Yehoram, is going to come and take my children as slaves to pay off the debt. And then Elisha does the whole nest with the oil for her. So Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vayhiba Hachris Ezevel as Nevi'i Hashem, when Ezevel was cutting off and killing the Nevi'im of Hashem. Vayikach Evadia Meir Nevi'im. Evadia took 100 Nevi'im. Vayachbi'im Chamishim Ishba Ma'orah V'gomer. And he hid 50 of them in a cave and 50 of them in another cave. And he supplied them with food and water. So therefore, in the schus of that is why he became a Navi. So the Gemara asks, Maishna Chamishim Ish. Why did he hide 50 in each cave? Why not hide all of them together in one cave? And the point of the question is, First of all, obviously the logistics would be easier if he's able to supply them all in one place rather than having to go to two different places. But another point is, you know, we know from Parshas Bechukosai, when you have over there Verod from Mekem Chamisha Meya, or Meya Mekem Revova Yodoifu, that five of you, when you're keeping Torah and Mitzvahs, will be able to chase away 100 enemies, and 100 of you will be able to chase away 10,000. And Rashi points out the proportions don't work. If 5 to 100, then it should be 100 to 2,000. And the answer is because the more Jews you have together doing Mitzvahs, Ein Adonim Merubin, you can't compare when many more people are learning Torah together, that it has a much greater multiplier effect. So the question is, why is he not hiding them all in one cave, and that way the whole 100 of them together are able to learn and grow from each other in Torah? So Amar Rav Elazar, mi Yaakov Laman. So Rav Yaakov, so Rav Elazar says, Avadya learned from Yaakov. Shenema, as he does when he's about to be confronted by Yitzchak. V'hoya macha nishal l'fleita. He split up his possessions and his people and all into two camps in case Esav attacks and destroys one camp, and the other one will get away safely. So the same way, Avadya figured, in case Esav's soldiers come and discover one of the caves, at least the other ones will hear what's going on and they'll be able to escape.
And he sent present 5x5.
What?
Sent present to Esav 5x5.
Yeah, well, Yaakov sent the presents in groups also, right? But we're not even talking about the presents here. We're talking about as far as when he split up his whole camp into two groups. Yeah. Yeah. So the same way, everybody just splits them up 50-50. Yeah. Rabbi Bohu says a different reason. Because he couldn't find a cave that would hold more than 50 people, so he had to split them up. He had to split them up into two. Now, Marsha asks the question, why do we need to assume that Avadya learned it from Yaakov? So he came up with the idea on his own, that in case these devil's goons come, then half of them will be able to get away. So Marsha says, because if that were the case, if he came up with it independently, then the Pasuk should say so. It should say something like, he put them 50 each in a cave, because he thought to himself, what if these devil's soldiers come, etc. The fact that the Pasuk doesn't spell that out shows we don't need to. We already know it from Yaakov, so therefore now in Malachim, now in Sefer Malachim, it doesn't have to repeat a svara that Yaakov already came up with in the Torah. V'hoya machna nisho
l'fleita. And it's a lesson too for us too.
It's a lesson for us too, yeah. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, yeah. Okay. Next, let's talk about Avadya further. We have one nevuah from Avadya. His is the shortest single sefer in Tanakh. It's part of Tere also, but to a certain extent, it's like a single sefer. It's one perek, 21 psukim, and it's all a nevuah against Edom. And we read it as the Torah Parshas Vayishlach. This is the same Avadya. The Gemara's understanding that it's the same Avadya. There are Mephoshim who explain that maybe not. Maybe on a pshat level, they say not necessarily. But the Gemara is assuming that it's the same Avadya. So, Chazoyna Avadya, Koyama Hashem, Alekim La'Edom, this is what Hashem says against Edom, and he goes on for 21 psukim talking about what Edom did wrong and why they're going to be punished, and he finishes off with V'olam Hashem B'Hatzi and Mishpat HaTzareh, the voice of Hashem Amlocha. So, Maishna Avadya La'Edom, why Dafka did Hashem send Avadya as a Novi against Edom? Given that, Rashi says, he said no other Nevuah. So why was he particularly chosen to say this Nevuah more than any of the other Nevi'im? Meaning, we have lots of Nevi'im who said Nevuahs against the Umas Ha'olam. You have several chapters in Yirmiyah and Yechezkel and in a number of the Treyoser that are addressed to the Goyim. But they also had other Nevuahs. Here it's one single Nevuah against Edom. So why is Hashem giving it to Avadya rather than just giving it to one of the other Nevi'im? That's going to be the answer, right?
I didn't know.
Yeah, okay. So Maishno Avadya La'Edom. In fact, actually, the Oruch Laner points out, I mean, you have also Sefer Yonah is all about a Nevuah to one particular nation, Nineveh, but we do know from Pesukim in Melachim days that actually Yonah did have another Nevuah as well. The Gemara in Yevamos actually discusses how many Nevuahs he had. There's one opinion that he lost his Nevuah after the whole story with Nineveh, but whatever the case, the point is he had other Nevuahs before that, as opposed to Avadya, this is the one Nevuah of his that's recorded. Because Hashem said it's appropriate. Yovo Avadya should go in Shnei Rishoyim. Avadya, who's living together with two Rishoyim, Achav and Izevel, should come the Loy Lamed Mimaseim, and he did not learn from their ways. It's appropriate. The Snabel Esav Arosha, he should be the one to say Nevuah against Esav Arosha. Should go in Shnei Tzadikim, that he lived with two Tzadikim, Yitzchak and Rivka, and sometimes for part of the time even Yaakov, the Loy Lamed Mimaseim, and he didn't learn from their good ways. So therefore, Avadya is the perfect one to say Nevuah about how Edom is going to be defeated and destroyed. Another reason, Omer Ephraim Makshah, Talmud of Rameir, Mishum Rameir, Ephraim Makshah, a Talmud of Rameir, says in the name of Rameir, the name Makshah, he comes up also, he comes up at the end of Bava Metzia. There's a couple of different explanations what the name Makshah means. It can mean that it can mean Meloshin Kishuim, as his job, his day job, was to watch patches where people grew cucumbers and melons and things like that to make sure that birds and animals and thieves and whatever don't get to them. Shoyim Kishuim. The other possibility that Mephoshim says, Makshah, means the one Meloshim Kasha, he was the one who would come up with good kashas. Anyway, whatever the case, he says in the name of Rameir, Mishum Rameir, Avadya Ger Edomi. The reason is because Avadya himself was a Ger from Edom. So therefore, it's and it's most appropriate then that he should be saying the nevuah against that nation. Behind the Amri Inshi, like people say, Mineo be Abba, Lezo be Narga, from the very forest itself comes the axe that chops down the forest, meaning you need a handle for the axe. Where do you get the handle from? From a piece of wood, from the same forest, that now the axe is going to chop down the trees. The same way, Evadia, who comes from that nation, is the appropriate one to be saying nevuah against Edom about how they're going to be destroyed. Marshall points out that also, you know, it has, there's also a point in it that it means, therefore, that the Nevuah will be known to be more true. Just like we had before, for example, we had when we had the Kaser says to, when we had over there that the Min says to the Bavina, yeah, yesterday, the Min says to the Bavina, but aren't all the nations considered like nothing? And he says, your own Navi, Bilam, says about going Lois Chashem. So when you have somebody from that very nation who says something, it's all the truer. So the same way, in other words, Evadia, who himself was originally from Edom, he's saying a nevuah about how Hashem hates Edom and wants to see them destroyed, so it becomes much truer that way when he's the one. The Atzidev brings this Gemara and this Moshul in Tanya when he's discussing the point over there that a person is feeling, suppose the person is feeling sadness and Atzvus is not a good thing. He should be trying to get rid of it, but sometimes, the Atzidev points out that sometimes that Atzvus itself helps to defeat the Yetzirah, al-Derech, like we're saying over here. So therefore, then the Atzidev goes on to explain it's not really Atzvus, it's really Merirus, because Merirus is when you're not just depressed, it's when you realize you're bitter over where you're standing. Now, Beruchnius, and you're going to work to do something about it. So, yeah.
That brings something positive.
So in other words, yeah. So from the negativity itself comes something positive. That's exactly what we're saying over here. In a similar vein, the Gemara continues with something from David. The pasuk describes Vayaches Moav. David defeated Moav. Vayimadidem b'chevel. He measured them with a rope. Hashkev oisem arza. He had them lie on the ground, and then he measured the people who are lying there with ropes. Vayimadid shnei chavolam lahomis v'gemer. He measured out the lengths of two ropes of people would be killed, and one third would be left alive. So why he did that? There's the point that. A few years earlier, back when David was on the run from Shaul, at one point he had taken his family for safekeeping to Moab. He figured, look, they themselves are descended from Moab through Rus, so the king of Moab would protect them. What actually happened was, once David left the area, then the king of Moab had them all killed, except for one brother managed to get away. So now David has a special reason to go and take revenge on them. Why he did it in this weird way with ropes is a couple of different points. A couple of different points. One thing is it represents like the rope, the measure of Hashem's justice to show that what he's doing is not just random. There's a reason behind it, that he's taking revenge on behalf of Hashem. There's an interesting idea that the Vilna Goyen mentions in one place, that it's al derech like you have in the history of the world, Shnei Alafim Toru, Shnei Alafim Torah, Shnei Alafim Yemos HaMashiach. So in a certain sense, so you have one third of human history how does it go over there? So he says basically like you have they're related to Toihu, and therefore only one third of them. So therefore, they only one third of them, the time of Olam HaToihu, can stay alive, and the other ones that are from the time of Olam HaTikun can't. And I think he gives an explanation. I think the Vilna Gaon says something like that. I may be misquoting or misrepresenting him, but I think it's vaguely along those ideas. Ben Yehoyada points out another point over here. We know there are three partners in creating a person, three partners, the father, the mother, and Hashem. Well, David is descended from Boaz and Rus, Boaz from the Jews, and Hashem. And then on the other hand, Rus from the Moavim. So like one third of him can be said to come from Moav, and therefore he left one third of them alive. Whatever the case, the Gemara is focusing on why was David the one to defeat and kill Moab. So the same thing, Amar Rav Yechim, Mishum Rav Shem Ben Yechoy, Hainu Damar Inchi, same thing, as people say, Mineo Be'aba, Lezo Be'Narga, from the forest itself comes the axe that chops it down. So in other words, again, the same thing, David, who's descended from Moab, is the appropriate one to punish and kill them. He also said of Dimi, Amar, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, He said a different expression, yerech mitoicha masrachas. A thigh of an animal starts spoiling from its inside. In other words, the very fact, because it's such a thick piece of meat, therefore there's more room for spoilage to begin in there, and therefore the whole thing spoils. So therefore, again, representing that David comes from within Moav, and therefore he's the one who causes them all to spoil and defeats them and punishes them.
Does says Al-Tarik Mar is only
answered. Al-Tarik Mar was only in Moshe's times. The Gemara explains in Baba Kama, in particular, Hashem was waiting until Rus comes out from Moab, and because of that, the whole nation was spared until that point. But David now is Rus's great grandson, so it's not an issue anymore. So fine. We'll continue next time. But we'll continue tomorrow. Bas Hashem. We'll continue. The Gemara is going to talk about another story involving Moab. Yom Yom Mashiach Gula. Of Hay 7. We have one of the mitzvahs that Hashem told the Jewish people at the end of the 40 years is to write a sefer. Every person should write a sefer Torah. And as the Rambam phrases it, there's a mitzvah essay on every yid to write a sefer Torah for himself. So the Rebbe talks about nesicha. Why are we not mekayim that mitzvah in exactly that way nowadays? So there's a whole sicha where the Rebbe talks about a lomdus in it. For one thing, we don't learn from Sifrei Torah nowadays, and there's a number of other considerations. But in any case, the Rebbe says that in various places and at various times and situations, where not every person is able to write a sefer Torah for himself, so then the mitzvah l'chila is that the way we accomplish it is you buy us a letter in a public sefer Torah, which is what we do nowadays. The whole letter in the sefer Torah campaign. And then, when every yid has a letter in the Sefer Torah, and this mitzvah is the siyum of the whole Tayag mitzvah, the Sefer Achinuch, when he lists the mitzvahs, has this as the 613th mitzvah. So that will bring also to the siyum of Golos, a Golos from which all the Jews, meaning again, all the ones, called Nimsa Kosa Basefer, all the ones who now at that point have a letter in the Sefer Torah, will now come out of Golos, the Vias Mashiach Tzitzitim, the Yad Mamash. Continuing on Halachas of Tzitzit, So we were talking various dinim about if the corners of the talus or the talus cut and rip. So now what happens if you have a corner of the garment is torn in the place where tzitzis are supposed to be placed? So within three gudlim of the edge, or within three gudlim and more than a keshet agudel. So again, we learned before the minimum distance of the tzitzis strings from the edge is the length of the joint from the last joint of the thumb. And the length of the last joint of the thumb, called keshet agudel, and the maximum is the width of three gudlin. So if in that area between those, it's ripped. Yesh omrim, that even a small tear could not be sewn with a thread of the type that would be roy for tzitzis. So say, for example, it's a linen garment, you shouldn't use linen thread to sew it up. Use silk thread or use some other mean. If the talus is silk, then don't use silk thread, and if it's wool, then don't use wool, etc. The reason is, according to this opinion, This would be a gzera of the Chachamim. This is Rashi learns this way. It's a gzera of the Chachamim because what happens, you might have some of the sewing thread left over, and you're going to think, well, you know what, there's thread here anyway, I may as well use it for tzitzis strings. So then you're going to go and add more strings to it, and that's no good. That thread was not spun for the sake of tzitzis. So you're not going to realize, and you're going to think that can be one of the tzitzis threads. So now, following that svara then, it would come out that even if there's no actual rip over there, even if you're just using, now you look at a talus or a talus cotton nowadays, you have those reinforcing stitches that they have around the holes to prevent the holes from ripping. Not that they always do a lot of good, but anyway. So according to that way of looking at it, according to the Svara of Rashi's, even those stitches that you're doing around the hole should also, and also for that matter, the reinforcing piece that we talked about before, that they sew onto the back, should not be sewn with swings that are suitable for tzitzis on this particular beged. Because again, the idea would be that you can't have any such stitches in that area, because as Rashi is saying, then you might think that that thread itself can actually be used for tzitzis. Now, the Alter Rebbe goes on to point out, there are those who argue with that Svara and say that, no, that's not the when the Gemara is talking over there about that point, it's not talking about that, it's talking about a different point of using tzitzis, of using threads that are not l'shem tzitzis, and using them for tzitzis, there's no problem sewing over there. Nevertheless, yesh l'hachmir where you can. So therefore, again, so in a wool talus, for example, they make those reinforcing stitches and around the holes and the stitches that hold the corner piece in place. They make them out of some other kind of thread other than wool. That way, you're not going to think that you can use them as part of the eight strings of tzitzis, because like we learned before, for wool tzitzis, you can only use wool or maybe linen tzitzis, as we talked about before. Now, Rav Tzedeva finishes off. Even according to the Svara, it would only be a problem if you're using white strings. If you're using colored strings, then there's no problem that you're going to combine it with the other ones, because nowadays nobody makes colored tzitzis, even though we learned in a previous siman that in principle the color of the tzitzis, the color of the chote lavan, should follow the color of the beged. If it's a green beged, for example, you'd have green chote lavan, etc. Lamaisa, nobody does that. Everybody does white strings, no matter what. So therefore, if you're using colored thread to sew, then there would be no problem, even if it's a woolen thread on a woolen tzitzis, etc.